is Erica Sherman. I am a public health nurse from the Wood County Health Department, also serving as the operations section chief for the COVID response here in Wood County through the health department. And I am joined today by some medical experts from Aspirus Doctors Clinic, Dr. Lisa Olson and Dr. Amy Falk, who will be talking to you in just a little bit here about some science behind the effectiveness of face masks. I do want to let you know that we are recording the presentation today so that it can be used with other family and group providers. And we do have family and group childcare providers, kind of a mix on the line today. So I think we'll just kind of start out. I'll give you a little bit of background about.
Erica?
Yep.
Can I just want to, just real quick, if everybody could just put their name in the chat box.
Sure.
That'll just be a good way to make sure that everybody can hear us.
Perfect. So, on July 30th, as I'm sure most of you are aware, Governor Tony Evers issued a statewide mandate requiring face coverings for all individuals over the age of 5. That then went into effect on August 1st. It does include some exceptions, but includes mandatory masking while indoors or in enclosed spaces. The Wood County Health Department, in alignment with our local medical providers, recommends the wearing of face masks or face coverings anytime 6 feet of physical distancing cannot be maintained. And we know that from many research studies that face coverings are indeed effective and are one of the best prevention measures that we have to slow the spread of the virus. This is true when there is majority of compliance in community settings, which includes childcare centers, schools, and work sites. And when the state mandate ends on September 28th, our stance will remain the same. We know that face masks are effective and are strongly recommended in helping to slow the spread of COVID-19. And they're a simple and easy tool to use to keep our communities healthy and childcare centers and schools and businesses open. And so with that, we understand that there may be some misconceptions in regards to face masks and, you know, what, and questions and concerns about those. And so we have our local medical experts here to answer questions today, Dr. Amy Falk and Dr. Lisa Olson. And so I'm going to hand the floor over to them to give you a little bit of more background and detail into the science behind wearing masks.
Awesome. Okay, so Erica, that's awesome. You took my whole speech. That was really
good. Oh, no!
That's awesome. So
well, then making sure we all agree. That's a good thing.
Right. It's like I just had to cross a bunch of stuff off of what I was going to talk about because you already took it all. That's really great. So as Erica said, so I'm a family practice doctor, and Dr. Falk is a pediatrician, and I've been here for about 20 years. So I think I've seen a lot of, you've probably seen my face around here before. And Dr. Falk and I kind of got involved early on this and tried to help our community by writing these really great Facebook posts. And it just kind of took off. And then we have really gotten involved trying to keep this community safe. So I guess our underlying thing is we just want to let you guys know that we're just here to help you guys. You have like super duper
hold that one
docs in this, and we really want to keep you safe and help with that.
Give me a second.
So that's
look
our underlying thing.
No, you're fine. I'm trying to listen to a webinar right now too, so okay.
So hey, if everybody wants to mute, it would be really great. So then So we got involved with that. We got very involved with the school system. We got to be on a reopening committee, which we're super excited about. The schools, I'm going to tell you, have been just wonderful to work with. They've been really super helpful. Part of that, Dr. Falk wrote this really awesome grant, and we went to the Legacy Foundation, and we got masks for all the kids in the school system, you know, Port and Assumption and Rapids, everywhere. So the elementary kids get 5 free masks. And they're from Crayola. They're really cool. And they will stay at school because we know how you guys know well how things go home and they never come back, like their gloves and hats. And then the bigger kids will get 3 masks and they will be on their own for that. So we really got involved with that because we wanted everybody to be on the same page if they could. So we didn't want somebody to have some fancy mask and somebody have something from their great aunt that was just awful. So they're all on the same playing field. They don't have to wear those. So if they have someone that they want of their own, they certainly can wear their own. But so we have gone to a bunch of different places just trying to get out the word. There are so many misconceptions. And last night was really great talking to a bunch of providers and just trying to sort through that and figure out what we can do. The main goal we really wanted to emphasize, it's going to be just super awesome, important that U.S. providers are wearing masks. And Dr. Falk has a lot of great details about that. So I'm going to turn it over to her for a minute.
Yeah, so thank you guys again for having us. It's been so great to be able to be involved with different community groups and talking about this. And we do know there's a lot of misconceptions. So we really want to make this an interactive thing. So if people have questions, I think you can put it in the chat. I think I can see them. Otherwise, absolutely just unmute and ask questions. But just as a little bit of a background, I've been compiling data on this since the beginning. So I read pretty much everything that comes out regarding to COVID, not from Fox News or other like lay media sources, but from the big cheeses like CDC, the WHO, and then all the scientific reports that are coming out. So we know that face masks are extraordinarily effective because it puts a piece of fabric between you and everybody else. So it stops slow the spread of droplets from reaching other people. And the droplets is how COVID spreads. There is aerosolization thought to be part of that, which means they can float in the air for hours. But if you slow the spread of droplets, aerosolization also decreases. And so it is so important. And I think we've heard from a lot of childcare providers that they don't like wearing the masks because they think it would might interfere with development and that sort of thing too. But I think we can get into this a little bit further. We're in a pandemic, and we know that when little kids get sick, they get it from grownups almost all the time, which is different than other viruses. As we know, most of the little kids drive influenza season and those sorts of things as being the first case, and then they give it to other people. But when children get it, they seem to get it from older children greater than 10, as well as adults. And so to us, that close contact, that wonderful relationship you have with each of your children that you work with, we just want to make sure everyone has opportunity to keep them safe with that. So as I alluded to, it's spread by droplet, maybe by aerosol. You need to be in contact with somebody for a prolonged period. Maybe, 15 minutes is what public health sort of goes by, though I think all of us who have cared for sick children know that contact can be pretty intense over the course of a couple minutes. Someone wipes their nose on your shirt and those sorts of things too. So all those would be ways to contract the virus from a little kid, but we know they tend not to transmit to grownups in such high numbers. And we know it's important to protect them when they're at childcare, because even if a kid gets sick, they're statistically less likely to be very ill from COVID-19, though there have been many deaths in the US from them, as well as that severe kind of inflammatory thing that can happen to some of the older children. But most importantly, those children might then go and have contact with a grandma or a sick parent at home or a sibling who has health conditions. And then, sort of the downstream spiral effect, as we all know, that can happen in a pandemic type of situation from that standpoint. So I guess I'll kind of stop here. I have lots of other facts and that sort of thing, but I just wanted to see if there's any early questions or questions that, things that you guys wanted to talk about. We're happy to talk through different situations and scenarios as well too.
I think one thing we talked about a lot last night is that it seems like the healthcare, you guys really get this and understand, and they had a question that it was very hard because of parents and misunderstanding and how can we get this out to the parents. And I think that's really hard, and I feel like we've been trying, and we're happy to try other ways. But there is, I think, some frustration about the mandate, and I would just tell you that it just wasn't working without a mandate. We were trying really hard to get people to wear masks. We were
You know, we've done everything. I talked to every single patient, and it just really wasn't working. An example is the summer school. And so, Amy, you should tell them your data with the summer school.
It's so awesome. So I have been surveying. So at WRPS, they have a large summer school group. There's almost 300 kids that ended up going. There's two sessions. The last session ended today. So it was two-week blocks. And I surveyed each of the teachers after each of their classes with a simple Google Form survey. I collected no student data or anything like that. I just asked the teacher, hey, what percentage of kids were masked when distancing was not possible? And so just that simple question, and then was the teacher masked? Okay, so week 1, 2, and 3 of the summer school, so week 3 ended last week, there was 19 to 28% compliance of masking. And we know we need 80 plus compliance to be equivalent to a lockdown. Okay, so if you have 80% of your population just who shuts up and puts a mask on, you are essentially as good as when we were all stuck at home, worried out of our minds. So knowing that, that was my goal. Like, okay, so I tried after that first week, 19% compliance. So I drafted a super short email that the principal sent out from himself saying, hey, let's keep the fun up at summer school. Let's just send a mask with your kid, kind of talk about it this weekend, and let's just wear a mask and we can keep having fun. And that didn't work. Same percentage the next week, the same thing the week after. And then last Friday or Thursday, as you know, the mandate came out. And so I thought this is going to be good. So I, logged in Monday and was able to see the data compliance jumped to 90%. Today was 94%. So the week, I mean, it was just unbelievable. Those graphs made my heart just leap. And it stinks that we as a society needed a mandate to see that type of improvement, because us public health, I mean, I can only speak for Lisa and myself. We have been just killing ourselves trying to get the community to understand that this is not going away. There's not going to be a vaccine in January. The immunity really sucks to this. You can probably get it more than once. And we're just going to need to protect each other. Like, we can teach little kids. I have three small children. I have a 6-year-old, 3-year-old, and a 1-year-old. And we talk about it every day with our two oldest, that you get to be a helper. You can be a leader. My kid was at summer school, and even in the crummy weeks of compliance, he's 6. I don't pretend that he wore it all day and was perfect. Absolutely not. And you guys know, little kid, you know, it is what it is. But we talked about it. We said, hey, you're a leader today. Just wear your mask. It's orange. It's fun. And we, you know, just sort of setting that stage as a parent. And I'm working with my families to sort of do that and raise around that. But anyway, we've been pushing and pushing, and so has public health. And we just, this is clearly working. So, and we really, as we said, wanted to drive home that, you know, if there's concerns and questions about them, we want to chat. And then we just really want to try to get as many people as we can understand that when and if Evers thing falls on its face or illegally is thrown out or it expires and is not extended, this thing is not going to expire. And we're going to need to continue doing these measures as well too. I think one thing really quick, Dr. Olson, we get all the time that, what are the risks of wearing a mask or the downsides or whatever? So there really are none. So you don't get headaches. You can still exchange gas through your mask, even like a big, I have an N95 sitting on my desk. I only wear this sometimes. And as much as I hate it, it hurts my face. I still can breathe just fine. They let me take care of patients. I was in one for over an hour yesterday and I thought I was going to die, but I didn't. I felt totally fine. It was uncomfortable, but it wasn't a big deal. And then also we're pointing out to people that you are not in it all day. So like if you as a childcare provider put it on, you want to have it on as much as you can when you're inside, except when you're eating. But if you're alone, which, you know, caring for little kids myself, I'm never alone, but whenever you are able to, you can take it off if you kind of get away from them. They're, you know, they're maybe doing a different activity or watching a movie. That's a good time for you to take a break and can get some time out of it. And that really does feel good. When you go into the bathroom, that's a great time, you know, just to get a little bit of a break. And those do add up over time. And we always say just practice. It gets easier. It gets better. It really does get easier. So.
Yeah, I think on that same one, we've heard a lot about, hey, I'm going to be doing my own carbon dioxide and all that. That's not true. So that's not true. There's tons of great information about that. So that's not true. We've heard about, hey, then I'm just doing my own germs. That doesn't make sense either. Those are your germs anyway, so you already have them. So that one doesn't make sense. And then the one we hear about, boy, emotionally, I think this is just hard for kids to see me in a face mask. And sure, this is no fun, but you know, our role is really to protect those kids. And I really think that these kids get it better than we do as adults. I mean, they get it. You know, I have germs. I don't want you to get them. And so the kids really have not been the problem as much at all. So, you know, I think they get it. And so the developmental kind of stuff, really, we don't have to worry about. Someone had a really great question last night. I just was thinking about some of the other questions that they asked, and then we'll try to stop talking for a minute. But they said, hey, what do you think about, you know, cleaning off our groceries before when we get home and those kind of things? And what I said is, you know, I did that too at the beginning. I don't do that anymore. And, you know, we're learning more and more about this. And so some of those things that we did, I don't think we need to do. And that kind of, I know that's a frustration that people have. They're like, you know, they keep changing things, you know, that, you know, they tell me to clean their groceries. Now they tell me not to. That's kind of, you know, our world. That's what medicine is. And, you know, you guys, you know, things I told people 20 years ago are very different than now. And they change because of studies and we get more information. Well, this COVID thing is still new and it's moving at super fast speed. Dr. Falk says all the time, we're making the airplane as we're flying it. So we're, you know, some of this stuff we're just figuring out as we go. And so I just think that's super important. So no, I don't clean off my groceries anymore. Okay, that was my big thing I was gonna say. And the other part, I had a great comment last night and said, you know what, could you guys make a video or something that we could show the parents, because that's really the hard part. And we would love to. We would be happy to do that for you. And what I think would be helpful is if people had a bunch of questions, we could interview each other and you could have, you know, the two of us doing it. But we don't know exactly what you'd want us to say. But if you wrote down a bunch of questions, we could make some funny, entertaining or not, or whatever thing, because we just want to help you guys. So we just care a ton about this community and we're really worried because, you know, a lot of people, I don't think are taking it as seriously as we need to. And we totally can do this. I really feel like the schools are getting it and, I mean, are being good about it. And with kids being masked at school, I think that's going to help a ton, but we got to get the community behind us. So anyway, I'll stop talking. If anybody has any questions, we'd be happy to field them.
I think you did a nice job last night of talking about what types of masks might be the most effective. Can you go through that once again?
Sure. Yeah. So I've always said, so there is a hierarchy of mask effectiveness that I'll go through, but I want to preface by saying I am okay with anything you put in front of your face in the environment. So whatever is most comfortable and works for you, I think that's good. That being said, my least favorite, so bottom of the totem pole are those gaiters that everybody loves because you can have them around your neck and just pull them up. Those are single ply, super duper easy to breathe through, which means a whole lot of spit goes through there too. But again, a barrier, so I never say anything, and it's a good attempt. The best ones are, I don't have a cloth mask in my room, but anyway, you guys all know the cloth masks. I like the ones with the nose bridge just because it makes it more comfortable. It doesn't ride up. Dr. Olson, thank you for modeling. And it doesn't ride up. It can, and then fits around your ears, which means that it has a little bit tighter fit around your face. And so making sure that it's covering both your mouth and your nose. This is my least favorite thing to see at the grocery store when I see people like this. So anyway, those cloth masks are good. Two ply is good. They make ones that have filters in them. Like my husband has some that he wears to work that have like a 2.5 micron filter, which is allegedly better than my N95. So I don't know. Yes, I will talk about face shields. Face shields are not a substitution for face masks at all, per the CDC. Mainly because I have like three in my office. Mainly because when you put it on, all the spit keeps flying here. This we wear these with every single patient encounter, and it's meant to protect me. So it's like one extra barrier of spit bouncing off this thing. This is so attractive for working with little kids because they can see your face, they can see your smile. I know it, but these are useless. Okay, these are useless for you. They do sell some for like $20 where they'll have like this big neck thing, so it would catch all your spit down here. So if you're going to be in like a hooded tent, that's fine, I think. So that would be something else to think about, but not those plain shields. I know, I wish they would. Anyway, so a step up above the cloth face mask would be a surgical mask. In a different world, Dr. Olson and I would wear one of these to see someone with a sore throat or a cough, and then I would throw it away, which to me is just absolutely bonkers because I wear this one. This one is a really good one. I've worn this for like a week because it's the one that I like. We all have our favorites. And so we do reuse these over and over again, which is not how they're meant to be done, but we need to do now because we're conserving PPE. So anyway, surgical mask, there's some other step ups of those we don't get unless we're in the OR. And then ending with an N95, you do not need these. These are super uncomfortable. You have to be fit tested for them, so they're useless unless you go through this awful process we have to do once a year. We have to read about rainbows, and they spray you with bitter stuff, and it's really awful. But anywho, so that, you know, isn't really for general people there as well. So that's kind of my hierarchy. And again, anything that's over your mouth and your nose when you're within 6 feet of people, and knowing what we know about aerosolization, if you're inside with other people, having it on the majority of the time is going to be the thing to do. But obviously, as we talked about, finding time for breaks for yourself as you get comfortable wearing them is really important.
And I think that's a great point about outside. Outside is absolutely better than inside. So as providers, if you can, you know, do stuff outside, that is always the best, because things are, you know, floating into the environment instead of hanging out in the room. So the schools are really going to be different this year. They're going to have some I think they're going to go outside for classes sometimes. They're going to, gym class is always going to be outside until, you know, it gets winter. And they are really working hard with doing those kind of things. I'll ask some of the questions from last night. Somebody asked about, they were worried about the older kids coming home from a school and then mixing with the kids. I'll tell you, I really think that the schools, I think they're going to be much better. I feel better about my kid going to school than I would about going to a bar. So, you know, at school, they're all going to have masks. They're going to be washing their hands. They're going to be not hanging right on top of each other. So I think the kids coming home from school are going to be okay. Anybody have any other questions?
What are some of the barriers you guys have had last night? I know we heard about, like, it's really not, I don't want to say not you guys, but the parents that are kind of the barriers or difficulties with kind of getting childcare providers to mask. I've heard different things from different centers, but wondering if you've gotten pushback from parents that you've wanted to wear a mask and they don't want you to. That to me would be crazy, but have you heard that at all?
If you're chatting, make sure you unmute yourself because everybody's muted.
Okay, so I think another thing I guess we always are accused of is like really pushing masking, and that obviously only works if you are distancing when you can. And again, I know little kids, you can't mask at all. There's a question. Okay, I'll get to that in a second. Anyway, masking when you are unable to physically distance, and also making sure that you're sanitizing and hand washing. I think you guys as childcare providers, as me as a pediatrician and a mom of little kids, I mean, it's like constant hand washing. You know that. And we've talked with the schools there, you know, they read something like, oh, actually washing your hands with soap and water is superior to Purell, which is probably true, except that all of us know a two-year-old, you know, my three-year-old, when I have him wash his hands, it's one of these and rinse, you know, it's not the big 20-second thing. And so of course, working with children on those skills, super important, always really good. But in a pinch, you know, every time they do something else, Purell, I think, is more effective simply due to it's a little more foolproof, I guess, and doesn't, you know, require quite as much skill, I would say. So and then it's good in a pinch for you guys too, unless your hands are visibly soiled with that. So another thing, speaking of visibly soiled, so those of you who change a lot of diapers, just we should be cognizant that COVID-19 is shed in the stool for a really long time. So they're passing virus in their stool. a lot for a long time. This is the same thing with hand, foot, and mouth, by the way. They shed hand, foot, and mouth virus for like months out of their stool. So, but they're allowed to come back after they have a fever, right? So, anywho, super good hand washing anytime you help somebody go potty, which obviously, you know, you guys are doing, and that's a big part of your day, but making sure they are, I don't think you need to sanitize the toilet crazy, that sort of thing too, but, maybe extra measures with doorknobs and those sorts of things around those areas, in your particular population. So I think there was a question. I don't know if I can access it. Can one of the people?
Amy, it says, are you recommending 3-year-old preschool wear them and also 4-year-olds? So what's your thoughts on 3 and 4-year-olds?
Absolutely. The CDC says children 2 years of age and up. So governor's thing, 5 years and older is great. But yes, kids 2 years of age and older should be wearing masks. 3-year-olds absolutely can do it. I am confident that Dr. Olson said they're better than grown-ups. You just need to sell it that way. There's very few exceptions. There's like very few medical exemptions for that, and really no psychiatric exemptions aside from like super severe autism, for which they should be working with therapies with that as well too. So yes, my 3-year-old's going to be going to 3K, and he'll be going with a mask with, you know, the kind of encouragement and expectation from us that he wears it when he's able. And again, we know kids aren't perfect. They're going to dingle with it. They'll touch it. But if your hands are clean, that's okay. And, you know, they'll get used to it. I saw a really interesting thing on Facebook. You probably have seen it too, that a suggestion from a mom was that if your kid's having trouble with wearing a mask, anytime they wanted screen time, they need to have a mask on at home. So you either don't get screen time because you won't wear your mask, or you'll get used to wearing your mask. And I thought that was just brilliant for some families who might be encountering some difficulty with that. And this one group I was reading about, they had some great success. Their kid was kind of a mess about it, and then all of a sudden it was kind of not an issue because they were distracted. They were doing something different. And then that might make school teachers have a little bit easier, or you guys too, have an easier time with that. So long-winded answer, yes, 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds should absolutely mask.
Can you talk to them about asthma?
Kids with asthma absolutely need to wear a mask. If they're having an asthma attack, they shouldn't be at school or preschool or daycare. They should be coming to see me so I can fix that. So obviously people who are short of breath, can't breathe, can't remove their mask themselves. So if they're paralyzed, you shouldn't be forcing a mask on those people's faces. But people with asthma are at higher risk of severe disease from COVID-19. And we are learning more. Dr. Olson always says this part, but we are learning more that, you know, I wear my mask to help you, but it also probably helps me a little bit, which I think stands to reason. If you have something in front of your face, maybe it's not as good as this or my N95, but it is better than nothing. And so anyway, those kids with asthma wearing a mask while they're easy breathing, not having, you know, they're not needing tons of albuterol, and that sort of thing, they're probably being protected a little bit. So, and the asthma and allergy immunology specialists have said categorically, there's like no excuse for asthma wearers not to wear a mask unless they're having a bad problem, in which case they need to see me, not you. What other questions? That was a good one.
Okay, Dr. Falk, what about other kids that come and they have runny noses? And what are the providers supposed to do with other kids with who are sick? I fielded that one tonight, so it's your turn.
Okay, so we are working on an algorithm with the school. So right now, I guess we'll take a step back. So there is not a clinician in the country who can distinguish a regular cold runny nose from a COVID runny nose. There is no tell right now. I am not good at it. Nobody is. Nobody can know. So the list of symptoms.
It's different than influenza. Influenza, I can almost tell you when you come in. I have the key symptoms and I can predict it pretty darn well. COVID's very different. Sorry.
Very different. And okay, so the list of symptoms for COVID-19 are super long now. So as you know, it includes nasal congestion. Any one of the following requires a test: nasal congestion, GI stuff like diarrhea, runny nose, bad cough, loss of taste or smell. That's pretty specific. That one's easy, but that tends to be the more teenage and young adult people who are doing that type of symptom. So anyway, sore throat, headache, all those types of things, very common with lots of different things like strep throat, all the regular colds, influenza. And so we are stuck with, what are we going to do when people are in the childcare setting or in school and they present with one symptom of COVID-19? So the Department of Public Health, no offense, Erica, they really haven't come up with a whole lot to help anybody with this. And so I said, well, guess what? It's mid-August, so I'm going to make my own algorithm. And it works pretty good. So basically, we triaged it into high-risk symptoms and low-risk, which again, I am categorically uncomfortable with, because a runny nose could be just a runny nose, or it could be COVID-19. But anywho, and I'm happy to send this to you guys. We're vetting it with the schools, and it will likely be used across the county. But so high-risk symptoms are cough, loss of taste or smell, shortness of breath, or fever. So if you have one of those, so a new cough, a kid with a new cough should be isolated in your facility and sent home to request COVID-19 testing. And if they have two low-risk symptoms, so anything else, if they have a sore throat and they puked, which could be strep, by the way, I mean, everything else still exists, right? So anyway, if they have any two other symptoms, like a runny nose and a headache, they should be sent home and request testing. Isolated runny nose could maybe stay with, again, I have an asterisk by that too myself. But anyway, so I think if you guys have a child who's exhibiting for sure a new cough, or any symptoms that you find to be suspicious, which honest to God is all of them, they should probably not be in your center. And they should be requesting COVID-19 testing. However, the testing capacity nationwide, statewide, and locally is an absolute disaster as well. So nobody has enough reagent, nobody has enough tests. Testing turnaround is 6+ days. So if you are excluding a child from childcare due to presumed COVID-19 and they can't or won't get testing, they should be staying at home and isolating for 10 days. That's what happens if you're COVID positive. You're 10 days from symptom onset, you're out. This is without a contact or exposure to known COVID-19. So if you're just going to presume that their sore throat, runny nose, and cough is COVID-19 and they're not going to come in or can't come in or can't get a test, then 10 days and they can come back. They do not need a doctor's note for this. I do not, please God, do not make me see every single runny nose in the city of Wisconsin Rapids. I'm happy to see sick kids. And we're just, you know, sort of seeing this like inundation of kind of need for that. So we're trying to mitigate with public health. If they have an exposure to COVID-19, they should quarantine for 14 days because that's how long incubation is. So up to 14 days with them. So long-winded answer, if it looks like a cold, looks like a GI bug, it could very well be COVID. Additionally, you know, on this algorithm, we have public health added that, you know, if you can exclude, if you can rule in something else, like if they have an ear infection or strep throat, or if they have influenza, technically speaking, there are many, many case reports of co-infection with strep and COVID-19, co-infections with strep and influenza, or COVID and influenza. So to me, if I'm able to like shake my finger at something else, still not 100%. So I think we just need to be cognizant of that and maybe not, and I know this is so hard for your families. I mean, saying, hey, guess what? Your runny nose needs to be out of my place for 10 days. I mean, the economic burden of this, you know, we all know is a disaster, but in light of trying to keep the rest of the kids in your facility healthy, you healthy, so that you can keep serving all those families, something to consider. And we're happy to help. Public health, I'm sure, is happy to help, Kelly and that group as well too, regarding your plans with that if you don't have them already.
And Dr. Falk, I would just add that once we do have that algorithm solidified and finalized, we will definitely be able to share that with childcare providers as a reference as well, so we can get that out to childcare.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. Again, we kind of designed it ourselves, which is not ideal, but without, you know, and if something better comes from the state or federal, then fantastic. But until then, we're just trying to help kind of put out, and Dr. Liebert's vetted it, Dr. Olson, you know, public health has been helpful in helping us vet it. And it's just something that makes sense and is practical for, I think, approaching the school year and then approaching our cold flu season. They're thinking about using it for even the teachers as part of their algorithm. It's very simple. So once we get it all vetted, absolutely, we can get it to you. And again, if anybody else has something more brilliant to contribute, you know, we are happy to revise it or throw ours out, but we just wanted to get something out there.
Can I ask if childcare programs are going to be keeping the masks at the programs How would you recommend, or how often would you recommend they clean the masks?
Yeah, the CDC has great, they have great stuff about caring for cloth face coverings. And so pretty much the right answer is you're supposed to wash them just as you would the normal laundry after each wear. And I think especially if you're going to like have a basket of masks when the kids come in, they take one. If you're going to kind of mix masks, as long as you're washing them between wears is totally fine with that. With our mask grant that we got, the middle and high school students are going to be responsible for their own. And so I'm under no illusion they're going to wash them every day, which again, it doesn't really matter because it is just meant to stop spit. So if it gets a little grody or whatever, I mean, it's their problem. But if you're going to have the masks shared between multiple children, just throwing them in a load of laundry, washing them by themselves, you know, kind of collecting them at the end of the day, throwing them in as a, like a regular cycle, drying them. They're supposed to be dried on the hottest setting you can. And then kind of ready for next day's use is all you need to do.
What as a provider or person, if you have to sneeze or cough because of allergies and stuff, and you got a mask on, what is the best thing to do?
Just do it right into your mask. So they teach us like in medical school, like not to turn your, so I think turning and coughing into your elbow, even with the mask on, it's good just to kind of catch those. But when you have a mask on, it's meant to stop that type of stuff. So I wouldn't face a child and sneeze because some droplets will make it through with your cough or sneeze due to that. So I think the same etiquette you would do, don't touch your mask to cough or sneeze. Does that sound about right, Dr. Olson? Just kind of don't touch it, just cough and do it. It'll stop, but your mask will stop it.
I know I did it, and one time I could feel the stuff go out the top when I was coughing.
Yeah, so good. So they're not perfect. So that's why I think instead of, you know, facing the person you're dealing with, you know, kind of still doing that thing we teach all little kids. You guys know I'm doing it for you, but you know what I'm talking about.
Or trying to get in the other room real quick when you're doing that.
Yeah.
And then washing your hands. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
That's a good question. Anybody else out there? Those practical stuff. I mean, that day in, day out stuff we know is like the hardest thing to sometimes figure out if you're on your own or trying to find the right combination of stuff. So. I just want to say I so appreciate you guys and what you do. I mean, it is just unreal. I don't know. I care for kids, but not like you do. I always say I could not have your job. 100% would not want nor could do your job well. And it's just such a blessing that we have you guys in the community. And we know you want to keep everybody as safe as you can. And there's just such great opportunity. And we think that, I mean, well, we know it's going to be, we're going to see less influenza this year because we're masking and hand washing like crazy people. We're going to see less like all the regular garbage. I just got an email from some big important public health person from Madison that the southern hemisphere right now is supposed to be having their influenza season and it's almost undetectable, which is crazy because this is the time of year we all start looking south like what's going on down there. That'll be a harbinger for what we're going to have. So I think, and because number one, Australia's been amazing with masking, but some of those types of data is coming and it's just really reassuring that, you know, we're all kind of bracing for the winter. And I think that's an appropriate thing, but I almost wonder if we all get our community on board and really get into masking, hand washing, distancing, doing it right. Not just you guys, but the families you work with, sort of working with them and trying to educate where you can, letting us know how we can best reach these people or reach people, you know, I think we could have a really good winter. I mean, I think there's some, like we can be optimistic a little bit, I think is fine. So.
Right, because we're all in this together. We keep telling every time we end it, we've been in so many meetings and written so many emails, and we are honestly all in this together. So, we're happy to help, and we're really happy to have been able to talk to you guys today.
I did have one. Like, can you talk about wearing gloves? Like, is wearing gloves even worth it? Is it?
Yeah, no, not really. I think gloves are hard though because you're still touching things, and then for some reason we don't wash our gloves, right? So we're not washing. I mean, you'd have to change them all the time. So really, just washing your hands is
is all that you need to do? That's a really great question. We've heard that.
That is. I always see people, sometimes see people in the grocery store with gloves on, and I'm just like cringing because they're touching their phone, they're touching their face. I'm like, oh, their gloves are as bad as your hands. And you, so the best thing when you go out in public or when you're dealing is just every time you're able to, don't touch anything but what you're doing, sort of in Walmart, the second you get out of there, amazing hand washing, same thing kind of in your home or in your facilities. With that, the only time, I mean, I guess if you're not doing it now, kind of with that toileting type stuff, in case that child was an asymptomatic carrier and sort of shedding it in their stool. But I mean, I think just basic hand wash hygiene that you guys are doing for toileting stuff is probably sufficient. I sure as heck am not doing much more than that. So.
Thank you, B-Betts, for the kind words. I'll tell you, this isn't easy, and we've gotten a lot of heat both ways. And we honestly are just really trying to help and not trying to, you know, make life harder. This, I mean, man, I would love it if I could send my high schoolers 5 days a week. They're driving me crazy. But you know, my girls will just be going 2 days a week like everybody else. And so, and they'll be at Lincoln, and I'm confident that Lincoln's doing a really great job. And we're all in this together. So, yeah, thanks. Dr. Falk has her med students back, so maybe we're ready. Ready to roll.
It's okay. All right. They can't hear anything. It's just me. So, thank you guys again.
Kim, I don't think we can hear you.
If you find out if she had.
Nope, sorry. It still is very difficult to hear what you're saying, Kim.
If she had a question, if you want to email us or if there's something we can do to help answer that, just let us know about that.
Yeah, and please think about, I mean, again, that was a great comment last night. And we'd be happy to do a little video that, you know, you could send out or do whatever, especially if you wrote down your top 10 questions. Maybe we could do the top 10 questions. We could do like, she doesn't know David Letterman, but some of the rest of us do. So
I do too.
Oh, do you? Yeah, okay. So but we could do the top 10 things. Something like that, we'd be happy to do that, so. All right, so I guess we're gonna scoot off and you guys have a great day, and thank you again for spending some time with us today.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Bye-bye, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye all.
Thank you.